It's the link.
I'm talking about mixedup.com.
Man, it's the link.
Welcome.
I've got the strangest feeling someone's gonna kick his ass.
Welcome.
Mixedup.com.
Man, it's the link.
I'm talking about
mixedup.com.
Welcome.
There they go. Two criminal geniuses locked away together.
Mixedup.com.
Who knows what diabolical schemes they might concoct.
Mixedup.com.
Goodbye. Goodbye.
Hi, everyone. Juliana Forlano here from the Juliana Forlano Show on WBAI in New York City. Hey, what are you doing the weekend of May 29th, 2015? I know where I'll be, at the Left Forum. Have you been? If not, you're missing the most powerful, transformational conversations of the year.
You hear? I can see your eyes sparkling because you're on fire, not just for justice, but we're talking about revolution.
If you don't give us reform, you will get revolution.
Oh, yes. We embrace the reformers, those who want to tinker. Okay, if you want to be incremental, fine, but just don't stop there. We're calling for fundamental transformation of American capitalist society.
When was the last time you got to hear people talking like this?
Capitalism and democracy are not synonymous. They've been on opposite sides of each other since the advent of the republic.
Come add your voice to these powerful discussions. Left Forum, May 29th through the 31st at the John Jay College of Criminal Justice in New York City. For more information, go to leftforum.org.
Hey, Harry, old buddy, old pal.
So I want you to be my buddy.
Why can't we
be friends? You've got a friend.
Friend. Good.
Friends or buddies, as we like to refer to you as here at WBAI. Either way, we invite you to join us and become a member of this fine radio station. We want to partner with you, but we want to do it in the least imposing and most painless way possible. Here's the deal. It's called the Buddy Pledge. You give us your support for 12 months, and we give you access to the most eclectic music, as well as the best and thought-provoking news, talk, and community affairs. Sound good? It in your heart to pledge a minimum of $10 per month. Each payment will automatically be deducted from your credit or bank statement, so there's no reminders needed. Just join us for a one-year membership and go online at www.give2wbai.org. That's give2wbai.org and be part of our vibrant community. WBAI New York.
Hey, it's Bonnie Raitt, and you're listening to WBAI FM. My kind of radio. Don't change that dial.
tomorrow and speak.
Bathe in the warmth of the morning sun.
I'll wait for you.
I'll wait for you.
And I want to welcome you to this program, and this is Earth at Midnight, at least for another couple of weeks, and then it will transform into Heart of Mind. But in the meantime, it's a wonderful opportunity for myself and my co-host, Paulette Spencer, to say hello to you and welcome you to this Wednesday, Thursday morning. How are you, Paulette?
I'm just fine, thank you. How are you, Kathy?
I'm good. I'm actually really good. I was speaking with Paulette just a while ago. I found a really wonderful meditation that I'm going to be working with you guys on in coming weeks. Today I'm going to go through the explanation coming up in just a little bit. But it's really very, very, very cool because I have found that it truly works. We're living during very interesting times. And, you know, I just think that it is beneficial to all of us to recognize how expansive our reality is, because what we see is not all there is. You know, there really is an invisible world, and there really is all magnitude of types of beings in our existence with us. And, you know, it's just interesting to recognize. Now, when I'm saying this, you know, I consider a tree to be a being. You know, I consider people who have passed on to still be beings in the existence with us. We're not here alone. So I just think that it's a wonderful thing to look around you and begin to comprehend that everything is alive and everything has an awareness of some kind. And if we are open to it, we can communicate.
I agree with you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'll be sharing that with you in just a little bit, and then we can have a little bit more discussion. And let's see. Okay. I'm just looking for the audio that we're going to play in just a little bit. So our opening theme is Michelle India Cello Earth. And now we're listening to Angelique Kidjo Redemption Song. We'll be back in just a minute.
From mental slavery, none but ourselves can free our mind. Have no fear for atomic energy, 'cause none of them can stop the time. Whoa, how long shall they kill our prophets while we stand aside and look? Ooh. Some say it's just a part of it. We've got to fulfill the book. Oh, won't you help to sing these songs of freedom?
Oh, that's a nice version of the song, Angelique Kidjo, Redemption Song. Yeah, I might play a little bit more of that later. So this weekend, this Saturday, was the memorial for Robert Knight at the theater at the Riverside Church, and it was a very moving and beautiful event.
Yes, indeed.
And And, you know, we will eventually be able to play some audio from that, I'm hoping. Joe Friendly was there, and he made a beautiful recording, and other folks may have made some recordings, and we hope to get a hold of that. If you were there and you actually got some good sound, give us a call and let us know, because we need to gather that sound. So tell us about who was there, and let people know who the special guest was, whom they missed.
Well, the surprise guest was none other than the former analyst for the CIA, Mr. Ray McGovern.
Yeah, that was really special.
Yeah, Robert had interviewed him so many times in the past on issues of foreign affairs, and I thought he was really sort of the source to have there to speak about Robert, since foreign affairs were so close to Robert's heart.
Mm-hmm.
And we were also quite blessed to have others, including musicians such as Terry Waldo. We had the fabulous Mr. David Amram. We had a guitarist, Mr. Andres Reloff, as well as Randy Credico, the unique Randy Credico.
Yeah, the comedian and politician.
Mm-hmm. And Dennis Bernstein was there.
Came all the way from
Berkeley.
Berkeley, California.
KPFA. Yeah. We had Margaret Ratner Kunstler from the Kunstler Foundation for Racial Justice.
Mm-hmm.
We had Miss Elaine Bartlett, who had been a former prisoner under the Rockefeller drug laws. And the David Henderson, who is a poet and the author of the definitive biography of Jimi Hendrix.
And he had a powerful piece that he read. It was amazing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we had Miss Leslie Lowe, who Robert would have on his show many times in the 80s and 90s, and she was a real authority on local politics and, mm-hmm. and environmental issues. We also had Mr. Humberto Brown, who is a former diplomat with the Panamanian government, and he was featured in the film The Panama Deception. Mm-hmm. And so we were lucky to have him.
Very lucky.
Yeah. And Mr. Dennis Terry, who is a very close friend of Robert's from the neighborhood where mm-hmm. we live in the Bronx.
And he represented the family. I thought that was so sweet.
Yeah.
You know. Because our family very often are the ones that are, you know, there in our lives, and they may not be of blood, but they are of soul family.
Absolutely.
And one of the musicians is going to be performing soon.
Yes, Mr. Roy Jennings, mm-hmm. who was on the list, and because of timing we didn't, but he will be performing on Tuesday, April 14th at St. Paul's Chapel at Columbia University. And mm-hmm. he is a composer, and his specialty is in African-American spirituals and gospel music. And so he is a pianist and will be performing with vocal accompaniments. And it should be beautiful. It starts at 6 p.m. at St. Paul's Chapel at Columbia University. It's a completely free event and open to the public.
Great. So hopefully people will take advantage of that.
I hope so. I'll
be
there.
To have a free event, and especially when it's going to be something as lovely as that. And so that's cool. And I wanted to really say thank you to all the people who did come. It was a full house, really.
Yes.
And a lot of the folks from here at WBAI came, and I wanted to say hello and thank you for participating in that event. It was really nice. I thought that the people who came did so because they loved Robert and they loved his work, And they were very much interested in being a part of this special celebration. So I want to send back that thanks and gratitude to all of you who were able to make it. I'm sure there are people who wanted to but weren't able to. So I thank you for your good thoughts and wishes, well wishes, for those of you who wanted to be there but couldn't quite make it. So that's cool. Hopefully we'll be able to have the video and the audio for everyone to enjoy. So tell us about this memorial piece that you offered. Some of the photographs in there are pretty amazing.
Yes, indeed. I selected a few of the pictures that I found amongst Robert's papers, and the first photograph on the cover of the program is Robert, I think, would have been at a press conference. Mm-hmm. This looks like it might have been in the late 90s. It's a black and white photo where he's just sort of confidently smiling and looking ahead with a microphone. Mm-hmm. at his face. And the second photo was actually a photo of him and me, but I cropped myself out because I wanted just to emphasize his mm-hmm. smile, and I could see him smiling from his spirit in this picture. The mm-hmm. happiness just sort of shone through. The third photograph was a picture of him in a military helicopter when he traveled to Panama, and he's wearing a pink WBAI t-shirt, which he's showing off to the camera. Mm-hmm. And this would have been in probably around 1988, 1989. We also have a picture of him featured on The Daily Show from Comedy Central. Mm-hmm. And this was a frame shot that I took, which showed him as a correspondent. I think this was near Columbia University. Another photograph is of him at the WBAI studios in 1990, and this was the day that the Iraq War started.
Well, yeah, so that must have been like 505 8th Avenue?
Yes.
Yeah, I recognize that. Let me see that old board. It was before they had slides, and you had to turn knobs to make everything work.
Oh.
I didn't know how to use that board. And then there's one more photo there.
There's one photo here where I believe it was taken at the time of the 50th anniversary of Pacifica.
Right, we had a lot of special programming and stuff.
Yes, yeah. And he was sitting next to a group of guests in the studio, and someone came and took his picture. And so this is a crop from that picture.
Excellent. So it's beautiful. So if anybody missed out, is there a way that they can get
sure
they can get this?
I can if they would send me an email at thenightreport@gmail.com, the night spelled K-N-I-G-H-T. I'd be happy to send this electronically, or mm-hmm. if I have a couple of extras, I could send it in the mail. Mm-hmm. I also have available quite a few more copies of the transcription that I created of Robert's interview with Harold Channer from 2011, which was an hour-long interview. It's on YouTube. Mm-hmm. But I thought it would be interesting to actually read the transcript, and so I prepared that. And if you would like a copy of that, if you didn't get one, again, you can send me an email, and I can send that to you electronically.
Okay, that's pretty cool. That's very cool. And so thank you very much, Paulette, for everything that you did to organize this event. I think that I calling it an event, it was a memorial. I'm so used to BAI, everything is an event.
I felt it was an event.
But yeah. It was, in a way, because, you know, there were a lot of people there who I would have gone to see on any occasion. But
it was a happening.
Yeah, it really was. So that's cool. And so it's a lovely thing, and you know, I'm glad we had a chance to say thank you and make sure that we could honor the life, the physical life of Robert Knight, because I believe he was there enjoying proceedings. And I could just see his face grinning from ear to ear. So I think that he enjoyed it as much as the rest of us did. And it was just really beautiful. And it was really beautiful for me to see people whom, you know, it's like I was just a little bit starstruck, I think, with David Herman and Ray McGovern. I was just a little bit starstruck, and just hear them talking about Robert like he was like their old buddy, and it was really cool.
Yeah, it was really cool. Lovely.
So we're going to go to a little more music, and then we will be back. And maybe take a few of your phone calls if you were there or if you weren't there and had a little something to say. This would be your opportunity to do that. We'll be back in just a moment. The number, 212-209-2900. Sorry, hold on. Let me find the right slide. There we go.
Thank you.
to Kalamuni.
Kalamuni.
And it's from the CD Prayer, A Multicultural Journey of Spirit. I must have, you know, I have these CDs that I've had, been collecting for 20 years. I'm not sure how long I've had this CD. But many of my CDs are not available anymore. It's hard to find CDs. They might be available online somewhere, but it's hard to find CDs. And I used to love to go into the store and just, you know, like, you know, someone finds water in underground. I would just, like, allow myself to just walk through the aisles of the CD store, and that's how I would find my CDs.
Hmm. I would do something similar, Tower Records.
Yeah.
I'd go roaming around and just groove to whatever they were playing, and it was like I was in a candy store.
Yeah. I kind of miss that. It's hard to find. I used to get a lot of my books that way as well.
Hmm.
It's interesting. The first time I saw a book called A Course in Miracles, what was I doing? I was just, you know, bummed out. You know, whenever I felt bummed out, I was always going to go get a nice piece of music, find a nice book to inspire me. And I was just searching. I couldn't find anything that really felt, you know, really weighty enough for me to sink into. So I just sort of sat down in a chair feeling really exhausted and frustrated, couldn't find anything, and directly in my sight line was this book, A Course in Miracles. Now, A Course in Miracles is a book that's something like, I don't know, 700 pages. It's huge, at least the text is. And it presumes to have been written by the person we refer to as Jesus, you know, since we're coming to Easter, all the resurrection stuff, you know. And this book is written from the perspective of saying, okay, great, you know, all that stuff that they taught you was really okay, you know, but they really got it wrong. And he goes through all of the teachings that were attributed to the person we know as Jesus and corrects it. And it's very deep. There's a teacher's manual, there is a text, and there's a workbook. So between the three of them, it's probably a couple of thousand pages of material. But, and it took me, I never really read the manual, because I never was much for doing homework. But I did read the text. No, I read the teacher's manual. It's the workbook that I didn't read. Because I was like, what, you want me to do exercises? That's not my thing. So I read the text and I read the teacher's manual. And it changed my thinking in so many ways. Because what it does is it takes all of the judgment out of the teachings and puts all the love back in. And it was the first time I began to feel like Christianity was not a scourge upon the earth. Because up until that point, I was looking at religion as the thing that was causing so much chaos and hardship and pain, you know, the whole Crusades and everything. And so I was sort of blaming all that on God. And then when I was reading the Course in Miracles, it kind of gave me the perspective, well, maybe it wasn't God who created that chaos. Maybe it was these dudes who were in Rome and Greece and Italy and all those places. And it wasn't God at all. It was humanity that created the chaos on earth. I'm going to take a chance on this phone call. I believe it's... Hello, you're on the air.
Hi.
Yeah.
It's so funny. I just brought that book today.
Did you?
And it's so funny, I'm just sewing and I turn the radio on, and when I heard her talking so peacefully, I got goosebumps all over. And I was like, that was the book I bought today.
That is so synchronistic. That's pretty cool.
And I've been feeling really low because I had a really icky breakup with someone, and I thought, well, you just got to move forward. You can't get stuck here. So I pushed myself to go into the Barnes & Noble on 17th Street. I just think that it's so amazing. It just makes me so happy because I know I'm doing the right thing now.
Oh, yeah. Sounds great. It's a wonderful adventure. You'll enjoy it.
It's very conforming because I have so many invitations to go to different churches, and I'm trying to figure out which church am I going to with what friend. And then I have some other friends that say, oh, you believe in that fairy tale? And I'm like, yeah, I do. I do believe in that fairy tale. And then there are people that are not from here, so I have to say, you know, in this country, even if you don't agree with what people are saying or believing, be respectful.
Yeah.
You know, just be respectful. I respect you, whatever you believe. I might not agree with you, but I'm not going to make fun of you. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, we need more of that in the world. What you just said, don't have to disagree, but to be respectful. And I think that could change the world, those very words.
Oh, I just thank you so much for being here. I'm just covered in goosebumps.
Well, thank you.
Happy Easter.
Well, happy Easter to you too. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Good night.
Good night. Oh, yeah, that's right. It's Easter. Friday is Good Friday, and Sunday is Easter. I actually have a meditation class on Saturday in Brooklyn. For those who are interested, you can connect with me through the email, heartofmindradio@gmail.com. But it's a meditation, and didn't realize, because I don't really pay attention to these things, that it was so close to Easter. And so a lot of my participants are like, well, I can't come because it's Easter. I said, but it's not Easter till Sunday. Well, you know, family stuff kind of balloons into big affairs. And, you know, I remember when I was a kid, I liked Easter because it meant you got new clothes and you got candy. What's not to like? Excuse me. We have another call. Whoops. All right. We missed out on that one. Yeah, so Easter was a great holiday for me. Christmas, not so much, but Easter I used to really like. Very shallow, childish reasons, but what can I tell you? But I used to believe in those things. I really used to believe in them. And then I went through a period where I was not so sure. And then I went through a period where I was absolutely unbelieving. And then beliefs started to creep back in. And now I'm a believer again. I don't know. I guess that's the journey of spirit, I suppose. Hello, you're on the air.
Hey, good morning, Kathy.
Yes.
Hey, I just wanted to call and say what a wonderful, wonderful night that was for Robert Knight.
Oh, thank you.
And Paulette.
Thank you.
And, you know, one thing I was wondering is I talked to him for a minute after the memorial David Henderson.
Yes.
And I don't know how it would be possible to get a copy of that poem that he wrote for Robert.
I can reach out to him and ask him how that was
really
possible.
Something else.
Yeah, I can see if I can make that happen and see if
I don't have email or nothing, but I could get a hold of the station somehow or whatever. If you could get a copy of that somehow, would
maybe we could invite him on to read it.
Exactly.
Oh yeah. hey,
sure,
Kathy,
we can do that.
Kathy,
yeah.
I don't mean to interrupt you, but you want CDs, honey? You got to come to Red Bank, New Jersey, North Street, to Jack's Music. He's got thousands and thousands of CDs and albums. Used, new, you name it, he got it.
All right. Thank you.
Jack's Music in Red. Let me tell you a quick thing about Easter, though. You got me thinking about that, right? When I was a little tiny kid, I was allergic to chocolate. So I dreaded I couldn't have chocolate at Easter. I'd have to have white chocolate, right? So my sisters would get chocolate, I'd get white chocolate, right? So after I was about 2 or 3 years old, I guess I got immune to the allergy. So I could have regular chocolate. So when I woke up that morning and seen the three baskets all chocolate, I said, oh, I can't have it. So I went in the bathroom and got talcum powder. And I put it all over the rabbit. I took a bite out of it. And it's a good thing my sister come out. But boy, when my mom seen that powder, it's a good thing I didn't get an Easter licking.
It's hilarious.
But ladies, I can't thank you. And Robert, everybody that loved him and loves him and everybody, can't thank you enough for that wonderful tribute.
I'm glad you enjoyed it.
And all of you folks and your families, have a wonderful holiday.
Thank you. The same to you.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Good morning.
Bye. Yeah, it's morning. It's morning. One of the things, it's one of, you know, these things that you think about. I today got one of those, you know, cards that you can reuse. I forget what you call them. The subway cards. A weekly pass. Mm-hmm. And so I'm so, you know, counting my little pennies. I was like, I was going to use it on the to come through. And I said, well, wait a minute. If I use it now, then by the time I come back home, it'll be tomorrow. And I would have only used it once today. I like to really use those passes, you know, because they're, you know, you can go, you know, you can make 10 trips a day if you want.
It's a beautiful thing.
It really is. So I didn't want to lose a day for just one fare. Anyway, silliness. So let's see if we can play another piece of music from Prayer. It's a beautiful CD, A Multicultural Journey of Spirit. And since there's not enough light in the studio for me to actually read the pieces, I'm just going to have to play something at random and hope it's good.
Here.
Hello, Tom.
I'd just like to say this. Did you ever taste the competitor to chocolate called Caribbee? I believe it's called Caribbee.
Oh, Carib, yeah.
Yeah, Carib. And that's not bad.
It's actually very good, but it's not chocolate.
No, it's good, but it's, it may be... Not so sweet.
It depends on how much sugar you put in it, I guess. Chocolate is not sweet either, unless you put sugar in it.
Right.
But carob doesn't have the same allergic properties that chocolate has. And it's not as, you know, like chocolate is like a lot of caffeine, a lot of different things in chocolate. It's actually healthy in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
But carob is an alternative that you find very often in health food stores.
Yeah.
And I like the taste of carob, but don't ask me to pretend it's chocolate.
Yeah. They make some candies out of it, like cheaper candies.
Yeah.
I bought it in the supermarket some time ago. there's also, if you have like chocolate without the sugar, like I have it here, I have it for the hot chocolate.
Yeah.
And that's supposed to be good for your body.
It is. Chocolate is actually a very healthy substance, and it's not really very harmful until you put in the sugar in the milk.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, very true. Well, I don't put sugar in there. I'll drink it plain, and it's pretty...
Isn't that nasty?
It's pretty plain, like, you know. And I'll drink a coffee, Spanish coffee, without sugar, too.
Yeah, and, well, I can handle coffee without sugar. I don't know if I can handle cocoa without sugar.
Yeah, well, I've done it. I've done it, like, in the winter and all. I've had it. And I figured, well, it'll take some bad chemicals out of the body.
Well, you know, chocolate is actually a spice. In Mexico, they use it with hot spices and cook food in it. So you can get this sort of combination of hot pepper and chocolate. It's like a whole different dimension of what you can do with chocolate. So try mixing it with peppers next time.
I don't think I'm that brave.
Okay.
I know I can have it plain. That's all I know.
All right. Well, thank you.
All righty.
Bye bye. It's actually good with the way they fix it in Mexico. I forget what they call it.
Sometimes they call it mole sauce.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
You're so smart. My brain is old and you're smart. I'm very lucky. The number here is 212-209-2900. And I was talking earlier about, we're listening to Hare Krishna, apparently, by Ram Dass, probably. I've been doing, you know, I do a lot of meditation. I do a lot of research. I go into, you know, I listen to channelings. I do channelings. I open myself to a lot of information. And when I do open myself up and I hear something from a source other than myself, I always run it through my higher self and say, is this real? Does this make sense? And sometimes when you get exposed to something, it just resonates right away. And I actually found... some information on the internet. I heard it live or in recording about this situation that human beings are in on our planet with regard to the veil of separation that keeps us from having knowledge of our past lives, our histories, our connection to the spirit world. And also there's this issue within humanity within which we've forgotten who we are in terms of our divinity, and we've forgotten even to be nice to ourselves on most days. And we walk around beating ourselves over the head for the slightest of things and being down on ourselves and down on each other. And if we're going to have a planet that's evolving, we have to be nicer to ourselves and nicer to each other. And it's very difficult because it's actually, I've come to understand that we've been programmed in many ways. You know, there's a lot of programming, you know, in the media. There's a lot of programming in the, you know, in schools. We get programmed in so many different ways. But I came to the discovery that we are actually programmed by beings who are... not even really of our dimension. Does that make sense? So, for instance, I recorded something of this, and it may actually at this point be too long to play. But so I may focus on it next week. But basically, what it's saying is that initially we came into the world, into this human body, by making an agreement as our higher self, as our soul, was birthing essence into the human body in order for there to be that separation so that we wouldn't wake up as little babies walking and talking and remembering where we came from. They're actually waking up like that now, but, you know, remembering past lives and all that stuff. So there needed to be an intervention in order to allow the spiritual being to have an opportunity to explore the physical realm. And so we have what's called a veil, You know, a veil of forgetting, a veil of where we don't really remember our past lives or our quantum selves, quantum reality. We don't really remember very much when we come into this existence. And so this veil that we have been, you know, that kind of blinds us as we come into our physical body is actually a program that comes to us through the same forces that bring us to our birth, really. And its purpose is, and part of the agreement is, okay, we're going to come into this human body and discover from scratch what it is to be physical. Because if we didn't do that, we would come into the human body and we would say, this doesn't really work for me, and we'd pop back out. That's what was happening. So spirit would come into the body, and it would be like, oh, it's cold, and pop back into spirit. They couldn't hold themselves in the physical body because they were comparing it to what was so much better. And so they kept coming up with, trying to come up with ways in the spirit realm to hold a human body, to allow for a human body to stay in physical form. And so the only way that, I mean, a spirit to stay in physical form, because we're basically spiritual beings, was, part of that was to not have full remembrance of where you came from. So you come, we come into physical form and we think, well, this is all there is. And so we come into the world with this, to some degree, disadvantage, because we come in like totally innocent, you know, like little babies, when in truth we're actually spiritual beings that have been in existence for millennia. And so we come into our lives as little babies. And so I don't know if it's why, the why of it entirely, but if you could imagine that you were going to live forever, millennia of time, and you were just living and living and living and living and living, and people were like, you know, we got to come up with something else to do. So since we're infinite, what would it feel like to be finite? Since we live forever, what would it feel like to not live forever? And so I think that in the beginning, it started out as just a process of discovery and learning. But also it started out because the physical realm is what, you know, the density of the physical realm is so different than the spiritual realm that it's just a more tactile experience. So you can feel, you can touch, you can taste, and you can experience things in a way that you can't experience in a spiritual body. Yeah.
What you're saying actually brings me back to a conversation we had, I think it was the last show, about time.
Yeah.
I thought about that. And what I thought about was that the sense of time, even in science, I think has to do with either movement or some sort of molecular change, you know, aging, or some sort of action that has a beginning and an end, because mm-hmm. that's what you're measuring. But without that, without growing older, cells that die, things that explode, and you see the gases. What is time? And I remember you were saying that it's artificial.
Yeah.
And I thought about what makes it artificial, and I thought, well, maybe some of it has to do with things that die. You know, have sort of this mm-hmm. finiteness to it. Or things that explode or somehow have a reaction that we observe. But without that, what is it?
Mm-hmm.
Does it exist?
It's a good question. I don't think it does. Well, it doesn't. It does in... It exists in that it's a useful measurement. You know, because if you look at the clock, you know, okay, some point somebody invented a clock. Before they had clocks, they had big dials on the earth that just measured the sun. So the concept of what time is has changed over the ages. And has been manipulated over the ages, I guess. But when I'm saying that there's no time, what I'm saying is that it's sort of like a stream, you know, there's water that's passed and there's water that hasn't passed you yet, but all you could really interact with is the water that's right where you are. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I'm saying about time, is what happens is that people get, their minds get lost in their past and they relive old events as if they were real, but they're non-existent because they only were real at the moment that they occurred. And the same is true of the future, where you can worry about the future and plan for the future and have all of your energy in the future, but it's not real because it doesn't exist. And so the only thing that you could have any impact on at all in your life truly is the moment.
Right.
The now, the space we're living in. And so that's really kind of what I'm saying in part when I say that there's really no time. And what happens is when you allow yourself that sliver of reality, you age less. You actually do age less because worrying is what makes you age.
Sure.
And so in that sense, I think that time doesn't exist. But also, you know, it's arbitrary. It's arbitrary. You know, the sun rises, the sun sets, or so it seems. And we see the different phases of the moon and the different shades of the day, but...
Cycles.
Yeah, they're cycles. I don't know if that's so much time in the way that we think of it in terms of breaking down the hours and minutes and seconds and increments and, you know, tick-tock, tick-tock. It just doesn't feel real to me.
Hmm. Okay.
Does that make sense?
It makes sense.
I lost track of what I was saying. And so, yeah. So, yeah, you're right. It's time is kind of a framework that we create for ourselves, I guess, so that we can figure out what time to meet up at the OK Corral or whatever. You know, because if you don't know what noon is, we'll be there at different times. But, you know, from... what I'm learning is that you don't need to know what noon is, because if you're really following your inner guidance, you'll get there when you're supposed to be there. And so will everyone else. You know, it was like with the story with the book, the Course in Miracles, that I found the book a certain way, then a caller happened to listen. And you know, that's kind of how life works when you're not focused in on the increments of time, but are more flowing from the guidance within. I guess that's what I mean. So in the sense that you'll get where you need to be when you need to be there, if you trust that you're being guided.
It's a beautiful thought.
I think it's true. I mean, for me, it seems, I feel that it is true. I don't know that we can always hear the guidance or follow the guidance, but the guidance is being given. And every once in a while, we fall into synchronicity with it and something special happens. And we're like, oh, synchronicity. But really, your angel has been whispering in your ear for a month trying to tell you something. Are you hearing me? Can you tell me? Can you hear me? Can you hear me? And then finally you get it. Click. And it feels like a miracle. And it is.
Hmm. It is.
It is a miracle. I do believe in miracles. So anyway, what I discovered is that energetically, there is a field within our brains, and people are calling it the dark cell. I call it, I call it like a computer chip. It's like it's an energy substance that creates the veil inside of our brain and obscures the third eye, separates us from the true nature of who we are so that we can have the opportunity to experience life in the physical world. But what it also does is it allows part of you to be here and part of you to still be in the spirit world. So, for instance, your higher self is still in the spirit, connected in the spirit realm. If there wasn't a separation, your higher self could be drawn into the physical.
What do you mean by that?
It means that if you're living in the physical world, and you could be a really spiritual person, you could be a good human being, you could be trying to do the best you can, you're kind to strangers, you love kids, your higher self is probably going to be okay. But if you're coming to the world and you get seduced as a child to go into crime and you end up being creating harm in the world, if your higher self gets drawn into that, it will not be okay. So I've come to discover that the higher self can be impacted by what the embodied self is doing. So as much as your spirit and your soul, your higher self is guiding you from the spiritual realm, if you as a being are intensely negative, then you can have a negative impact on your soul and on your higher self. You know, and I guess that's part of maybe the fall. I don't really know if that's what is meant. But so, and what I've learned is that what has happened, you know, when we look out in the world and we see this horrendous evil, and you're like, how can this be? How can any human being be as evil as some of the people we see, create as much harm and suffering? And what I've come to understand is that, and this is what I was talking about, that there's a fourth dimensional reality that's, and it's really same place as us, it's just a different vibration. And this is where the higher self inhabits. It's the fourth level dimensional vibration. And so that means that your guides and your higher self and certain angels are all around you. You just don't see them because they're slightly lighter vibration. Okay. But usually what happens is when a person passes over, they pass over to combine with the higher self, and then the higher self carries you to the higher realms. So you may not be able to get there all on your own, but the higher self is in the spiritual realm. So when you pass into the spirit world, the higher self is there to hold you and keep you and take you the rest of the way. And so there's this partnership, because we're actually two halves of the same being. So the higher self loves you and just wants nothing more than to protect you and take you, you know, to the higher realms. And then when we move on to the higher realms, when we go through that process, it's all about healing any of the hurts that happened during your life and all that. Coming back, you know, coming to understand the life, and then we come back and we're reborn as a new human being in a new body. Don't remember who we were, but the higher self does. So the higher self remembers us from life to life to life and knows who we are. So what happens though with, go ahead, you wanted to say something.
I have a friend who has a son. And she had a very uncanny experience with her son when he was very small, maybe 4 or 5 years old. He said to her that in a previous life, he was an infant who lost his life after falling out of a window.
Wow.
And he said this to her when he was 4 or 5, and that he was given to her as her son, because I don't know who but some whatever power there is understood that she wanted a child so badly.
Wow.
And I know that she told me she had been trying to have a child, and this was the child that she ended up getting. And here he is saying that.
So he came in with the knowledge.
Yes.
And that happens a lot when children are young. They remember. And they also see angels and spirits, because you could see them interacting with them, babies. You can see them, you know, staring and cooing and playing with nothing. Well, it's not nothing. There's probably an angel there. So, yeah, that's a very interesting story. Mm. And so what's happening and what has happened is that, you know, we hear about all these awful secret societies and devil-worshipping groups. Basically, what they've been doing, I'm checking the time, is because they've created an alliance with these powerful fourth-dimensional beings, they've stopped their evolutionary process in the sense that when they transition into spirit, they go to this alternate fourth dimensional reality and then recycle back into the earth and never make it back into the higher realms where they're healed before returning to the earth. And so they have all of these bizarre practices that enforce each person who's part of their culture, their society, to go through this process of going to this alternate realm, which is not, you could consider it heaven in the sense that it's the same vibration as where the higher self takes you before going to the higher realms. But it's a different, I guess, region of the heavens. And what happens is these people, because they've recycled their soul and over thousands of years and maybe even generations, never getting past, you never hear those expressions, you know, high heaven or seventh heaven. There really are levels of heavens, you know, of realms that are a lighter vibration. Each level is less dense, I guess would be the word. And so the fourth vibrational reality, the people are, the beings are just like us, except that they don't have the solidity, but they have the shape, they have the consciousness, they have the physicality. So everything is very similar, but it's just the vibration is faster so that we don't have the physical mechanism to be able to see it. But if some people do, some people can see it. You know, some people can see auras and some people can see spirits and some people hear. So there, the communication is there, but most of us don't really see that realm. And so these beings have been recycling, not making it to the higher vibrational realms. And what's happening is because they recycled and never got to the point of healing and reviewing their lives. A lot of people have heard when you pass on to the next level, you get to review your life. And basically what a life review is not a judgment of yourself. What you basically get to see is all the experiences of your life from the perspective of the other people. So if you've basically been a loving person, it might be something to look forward to. if you've made a few mistakes, then you'll learn what those mistakes were and you'll say, I'm not going to do that next time. And that's about it. It's not a big deal. But if you are going through some kind of alternate culture in which you are being trained since birth to be part of that kind of culture, and it's not a racial thing, it's amongst all peoples, but it's a culture that doesn't bring you beyond a certain level before you come back. And what happens is the higher self degrades, and so the higher self degrades and become as engrossed in the doings of darkness as a human does. And so that's what's happening with a lot of these people who seem to be so horribly creating so much harm, and you wonder, how is it possible? It's because they're part of a system that has had them trapped. And I say trapped because these are still divine beings, but they've somehow ended up in a system in which they were trapped. And this occurred, in some measure, when the basic teachings were undermined. So I think it's sort of like Babylonian times.
Hmm.
When, you know, a lot of people say that our civilization started there in Babylonian times with that archaeology. But that's really not the case. But that's when the knowledge was reworked, started to be reworked. And it's because, like, when you look at the Christian faith, the Roman Catholic Church, at any rate, was not an original information. It came from older cultures. They just reworked it. And so over time, it just got more and more backwards and more destructive. And it's because these people were not making it to their higher potential, and they just kept recycling without understanding, without learning, and being, and so that the light of their soul, the light of their essence, became dimmer and dimmer and dimmer until there's almost no light left of their soul. And so I'm not saying it doesn't exist, but they're not accessing it. They shut it down. There's no life essence entering these people's beings. And so they find it possible to do the things that they do because they don't have a sense of life and love within them that that they need to truly be fully human. Does that sound far-fetched?
I wouldn't say far-fetched. However, I would say my sense is that any system or belief system can have people that deviate from what it was originally intended to be.
Yeah, it happens all the time. It's easy.
And at the core, I think, of all belief systems, I mean, many, I should say, I'm not an authority on this, but there are certain common traits about kindness, about honesty, about watching out for your neighbor. But I think that in the world we live in and the way people have evolved, some people have taken what was originally something that was meant to foster peace and use that to foster war. But I think that the core beliefs of many different belief systems are very similar and foster healing.
I agree with you. They're very similar, and whatever the people at the top of religions say, you know, whether it's the Pope or whether it's the, you know, I don't know too many religions, but whomever the authority is in that religion has very little to do with the majority of the people who follow it. The people who follow a religion do so because that's, well, their tradition, culture, but they're usually doing it out of the goodness of their heart and wanting to be closer to their divine essence and life. I'm not speaking of that at all. What I'm speaking of is that there has been it's like when you look at some of the activities around the world that are just really horrible activities, you know, beheading people, torturing people. You know, even, and it happens in all countries, you know, you look at Americans doing waterboarding and all kinds of torture. We look at these, the group of ISIS doing, you know, beheading people, doing torture. It just seems to be a one-upmanship of who could do the worst heinous crime. You know, the people who are making these decisions are not the ones doing the crimes, are not the ones doing the harm. It's usually some regular Joe trying to feed his family, gets hooked up into some group, and ends up being the one to behead somebody. So what happens between, you know, regular guy Joe to get to the point that you could torture and kill somebody? There's something happening to that being between those two points. And so I know I have this elaborate explanation in terms of the levels of spirit, which I've convinced are true. But if you're going to look at it from the perspective of just 3D, third-dimensional life, what happens to a human being to get them to the point that they can torture and commit murder? And, you know, I see it in a lot of the cops, you know. What is happening in that being for you to be able to pull your bullet 40 times, you know? What could be going on inside that person? And so I think that this is part of what has to be looked at. And I think a lot of it has to do with programming. And I think that there's a level of purposefulness to get people to that point. You know, there's a orchestrated plan in place. You know, the police department currently allows people onto the police force that 20, 30 years ago would not have been allowed on the police force, because there are people there who are not mentally balanced. There are people there, and they have brought in systems that, rather than allow police to do policing, which is a necessary job, they've turned them into, it's like they've amped it up so that they're soldiers in our streets, walking around with machine guns and bulletproof vests. And you could look at them and see that they're walking around with as much fear as the guy who's in Iraq. You know, so there's something going on that is creating this dynamic in our world. And so I don't think it's an accident. I just don't believe it's an accident. I believe it's an orchestrated control mechanism. And I believe it's being orchestrated because there are systems, beings who don't want the human race to rise. I think that there are beings who want to enslave humanity. You know, maybe they live in the White House. Maybe they live in every capital around the world. Maybe I'm seen too many sci-fi films. But the bottom line is, I believe that this is a real orchestrated campaign within which very highly evolved technology is being used beyond what we know and understand. And the bottom line is that we have been technologically, as human beings, programmed, and we could be set off like the Manchurian candidate to do things we wouldn't normally do. And so from that perspective, I believe that we need to find this technology, which is really not as physical as we think. It's more energetic, and get it out of our systems so that we can go on with our lives without being controlled.
And I think part of that control is fear.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And so much of it is that I think is what's engineered, and it's knowing how human nature works, and how you get people to fear things, and how you can ramp up that fear and convince people that you know their lives are in danger if they don't do certain things that they normally would never dream of doing. And when you first spoke about releasing things from yourself, and releasing those, that noise that you hear, that self-doubt, that fear, I think that's part of it. I think that not necessarily being sort of sucked into the hype and the systems that are designed to, in a way, seduce you, is a huge part of that state of mind that you're referring to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I understand your balanced response. I do. Because I'm sure I sound like a raving lunatic.
Not at all.
But, no, you're right about that. You know, it really is about taking yourself, pulling yourself back from that fear response. You know, because for me, that was a big part of getting through a lot of challenges in my life. Because when you begin to recognize how much of what your danger is real and how much of it is just fear-based. And this is what I was talking about, not looking into the past and not looking into the future, because that's where you find all the reasons to be fearful. If you're looking in the past at all the bad things that happened and could happen again, and you're looking into the future of all the disasters that may come, that's a lot of fear.
Definitely.
But if you're just looking at now, you can pretty much determine if you're on fire, if you're being blown up, if you're okay. You know, it's like if you can expand the spaciousness of being where you are and not give your energy into the past and the future, you can eliminate a lot of fear and
anxiety. Be in the moment.
Yeah. You eliminate a lot of fear and anxiety. But even when you're in that state, there's a lot of internal programming that upsets the apple cart. So that it becomes a struggle to stay in that balance, because you have the voices within you that keep burping up, oh, you know, that person doesn't like you. Oh, that person is judging you. Oh, I'm not good enough. I'm too fat. I'm too thin. I'm too old. You know, I can't succeed because I'm black. I can't succeed because I'm Latino. I can't do what I want because I'm a woman. Oh, I can't leave this person. You know, so all this stuff just keeps regurgitating up through our minds, and it takes us out of our capacity to be centered and peaceful. And a lot of that is programming. Granted, a lot of it comes from your parents, comes from society and media, and wherever it comes from, though, it has to be uprooted from our system so that we can live in a peaceful way and you know, be happy, to be able to really live what we believe. Because I think most people are good. They have good hearts. They believe and they want the world to be good. But there are all these shadow things happening inside that can prevent that from happening. And I happen to think that it goes beyond that for some people. You know, for most of us regular Joes, we don't experience the kind of really horrific things that some people do experience. And just like we see the torture, the waterboarding, the beheading, the this and that, it's my belief that those people, anyone who could act in that way, was also tortured, was also suffered something extreme to get to that point. You know, maybe they call it training, I don't know. But there's something had to happen. Something has to happen to a person that's not natural to get to that point. And so I guess that's what I was referring to. But the truth of it is, you can do something about it. You know, you can you can, just like you can energetically feel, like if you know how you're, you could tell if somebody's staring at you in the back of you and you turn around and you see the person who's staring at you. We have a sensory capacity. And you can use that sensory capacity to scan within your own body and find the place where you have been damaged, if you want to look at it that way. You know, I consider it to be an implant, but you might think of it as, and it works also for the area of your body or your being that's been damaged, that's causing you pain or discomfort. And once you discover where that discordant energy is, you can eject it.
Or shed it.
Shed it, eject it, get it out of your body. And so it's just, it's a way of using our sensory capacity and our intention to move that energy out of our body so that we can be free to live our lives without that kind of suffering and pain. So I think it's important to recognize whether one is rational, such as Paulette,
or slightly
over the edge, such as myself. And I like being over the edge, I have to say. That's where I live, on the other side of the edge. You know, I'm like on the tarot deck. You know, the one card where they have the fool who's walking on nothing. You know, they have all these images that represent different aspects of, I guess, esoteric knowledge. So you have the hierophant, you know, the one who knows the mysteries, the one who knows the magic. And then there's the one who, like, walks off a cliff with nothing underneath them. And to me, that's the person who has trust. You may not be able to see what's before you, but you have enough trust that you'll walk into the unknown. And so that's what that card means to me. And I tend to live on that realm of the unknown in terms of trying to understand the psyche and the spirit and not being afraid to be a bit of an oddball, you know, in the sense that I understand that there's a material world and we're living in it, but I equally understand that there's an invisible world that we're living in. And so, yeah, so that's what I'm saying. Like, I'm not really, I wouldn't call myself rational so much as, I suppose in its own way, in my own way, I'm rational. But I really do have more faith in the spirit than I do in the physical world. That, I guess it's the best way I could put it. I don't really... And I think the power is in the spirit world. And the reason why evil works and people who do evil are successful, because they also understand that the power is in the spirit world. And they're using it.
Yeah.
And the rest of us are not.
Wow.
Yeah, that's what I think. Yeah. Oh, boy. What an interesting conversation. I'm like, Paulette's looking at me like, okay. What did I get myself into with her?
Yeah. No, I think we're safe here. We're good.
We're good. We're so good. So we're about to make our transition, not from this world, but into the next program. I see Jim Freund waving from the other side of the entrance doorway. So please do stay tuned for Hour of the Wolf. We're going to play a little bit more music for you. And I think next week I'm going to play my recorded piece for you. I ran out of time this week. Or if you want to learn the meditation for removing this energies, you can get in touch with me at heartofmindradio@gmail.com. I do have a meditation class on Saturday, the day before Easter. And or you can tune in Friday morning at 10 a.m. I will be doing a program over the Progressive Radio Network. That's internet, prn.fm. And for a few weeks, at least, I'll be on Mondays at 1, right here on WBAI. So I am just all over the place in more ways than one. A bit of a, not so much of a pun. It's true. All right, I'm just going to play something for you from the CD. The CD is Prayer, A Multicultural Journey of Spirit. So let's play, and we'll bring in Jim Freund.
I'm not Good morning. This is Hour of the Wolf, a weekly program dedicated to science fiction, fantasy, enchantment, and the imagination. My name is Jim Freund. This morning, from the sublime, which you just heard, to the ridiculous, sort of continuing in the tradition of April Foolery with some comedy anyway, a brilliant reading of I'm Looking for Kadak by Harlan Ellison. And a movie review by Dan Persons. Stay tuned. I'm Dan Persons, movie reviewer for Hour of the Wolf. In my long history with the movies, one thing that I think I've learned is that love and immortality are mutually incompatible. Everywhere except the Twilight series, of course. That's the film series where love is eternal and beautiful. But then, you know, teenagers.
Elsewhere, it's not such easygoing, and it's easy to see why. It's usually laid out in the films themselves. If you're an immortal and in love with a regular human, you are condemned to witness the aging and likely decrepitude of your lover, while you yourself stay young and probably beautiful, because these immortals tend to be beautiful in these films. If you're both immortal, then you are locked into a kind of stasis. Neither of you are going anywhere, so love eventually calcifies into something more reflexive than felt. Uncertainty, apparently, is an essential component of love. Any of us can die at any time. Maintaining awareness of that compels us to better appreciate the person at our side. Either way, because of that incompatibility, the portrayal of the immortal in film tends to wind up the same, styling them as a kind of rarefied, detached elite. The big difference being that in mainstream films, the immortals are cool and aloof, while in independent films, they're cool and aloof, and at night visit small European clubs to listen to obscure rock bands. The immortal of the new film Spring, Louise, played by Nadia Hilker, appears to be a conscious effort by filmmakers Justin Benson and Aaron Moorhead to subvert that particular cliché. She's not a vampire, for one thing. In fact, what exactly she is remains an open question, something that I'll get back to in a few minutes. She holds down a regular day job, not surprisingly, as a genetic researcher. She's passionate, flirtatious, a little mercurial, with a sarcastic, occasionally cruel sense of humor. She's also Italian, living in a picturesque Italian seaside village, who speaks English without any trace of accent, which director Benson, who also wrote the script, tries not completely successfully to explain away. But bottom line, for a person without the fear of death, with the weight of at least hundreds of years of living behind her, Louise is endearingly alive. Maybe a little too much so. As refreshing as Louise's persona is, it doesn't completely gel with the person who has lived centuries, a person who has witnessed and in some cases endured firsthand the pleasures and horrors of history. This, I think, is partly a flaw in trying to avoid the stock somber mien of such a character, and partly due to some inconsistency in the scripting. Despite Louise trying to conceal her true nature, once an expatriate American, Evan, played by Lou Taylor Pucci, and by the way, he's the actual protagonist of the film. Louise comes into his life, not vice versa. Once Evan falls in love with Louise and discovers her secret, she becomes perilously and publicly vociferous about herself and her experiences. In one scene late in the film, she compulsively recalls events from her past while sitting in a church as Evan tries to rein her in and her body begins to transform into her true nature. It's a clever scene in and of itself, but it doesn't help explain how Louise has managed to survive all these centuries. Nor is it particularly clear how Louise's nature ties in with her immortality. Benson and Moorhead try for something of a scientific explanation, having to do with the character being a literal embodiment of the old ontogeny recapitulates phylogeny concept. But the explanation is so confusing that the film has to restate it three times before it begins to make any sense. And the moments when we see Louise transformed, which at various points involves fur, fangs, tentacles, and stingers, plus a killer instinct that leaves a few human and animal carcasses in its wake, those moments feel more ironically comic than horrific. That may be intentional, and I'll give Benson and Moorhead the benefit of the doubt in that. It's clear that the filmmakers are more interested in exploring how love depends on an awareness of the finite to work, and the supernatural and horrific elements are there to elaborate that investigation. As a result, an intent to keep the fantastic at arm's length may have crept in, intentionally or not. To their credit, the directors are successful in making Spring feel like a fresh take on an old scenario. Pucci's Evan, who is forced to flee the U.S. after a bar brawl lands him in trouble with the police and its vengeance-seeking adversaries, is an attractive lower-middle-class hero with more than a little poetry in his soul and enough intelligence that it becomes frustrating that he doesn't catch on to Louise's secret sooner. As a couple, Evan and Louise have more than enough charm, and directors Benson and Moorhead use their Italian seaside location to frame the couple's courtship beautifully. As much as my suspension of disbelief was sorely tested, I did not regret hanging out with these people, and I appreciated the director's willingness to forego a definitive ending to their story, an interesting counterpoint in a film that's all about finality. The teens can have their moony eternity of love. Spring, despite its indulgence in the fantastic, gives us something more real to value. It is running in New York now and is also available on demand for us agoraphobics out there. I'm Dan Persons. We are once again going to be archiving these reviews over at my Mighty Movie Podcast website. So if you want to check out what you missed, which admittedly over the past couple of months hasn't been much, please go to MightyMoviePodcast.com.
This story is copyrighted.
And once again, this is Hour of the Wolf. My name's... My mouth is dry is what it is. But that is also that my name is Jim Freund. And thank you, Dan. We have missed you. Well, for a while there, I missed me. Such are the... seemingly everlasting fund drives that we end up having to run here on WBAI in New York City. And if you are listening online, over WBAI.org. But at any rate, good morning. Okay, so this is another semi-freeform show. I have to tell you, I feel guilty about that. Because I have some interviews in the can, as it were, things that I need to edit. And once I do that, I will have a few more shows. And some good interviews in there also with people with recent books. And a couple of them that are, like, I have a really great interview from last fall with Genevieve Valentine, but I don't have a new story of hers. I may just end up going for an old recording of a story from her. Problem was is that at the same con where she was guest of honor, I ran in with my microphone just as she was starting, and she looked at me and gave a definite negative sign, which was, I'd rather not be recorded right now. I'm already sitting down. Thank you. Fine. I knew that she was going to be reading later on at KGB Fantastic Fiction, where Gordon Linsner records them for me. Usually I like to go. But since the show was moved to Wednesday nights, it's very difficult for me to go to a Wednesday evening event and hang out, then go all the way uptown here to Harlem, and then head back to the southern end of Brooklyn. I normally drive here and back is the deep, dark secret. And that would be pretty difficult and difficult to pick up and drop off guests if I did it the other way. So